Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. We'll begin our hour of old-time radio crime stories this week with Mr. and Mrs. North. We'll hear their episode from September 22, 1943, titled The Contagious Confession. After that, we'll hear the Black Museum, hosted by Orson Welles, an episode titled The Khaki Handkerchief from October 14, 1952.
The Adventures of Mr. and Mrs. North, starring Alice Frost and Joseph Curtin, and brought to you by
Woodbury, 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 for the skin you love to touch.
Jerry and Pamela North often drive Bill Wigand to the verge of insanity. However, for all their bewildering antics, they often help him, too. And at times, he even goes so far as to ask them for advice. Tonight is such a time, because he's faced with a dizzy situation. Now, as Bill seats himself in the North's living room, Jerry says to him,
"All right, Bill, now what's this great problem that's puzzling you?"
"It's a case that I'm working on."
"I know. Somebody crept to the window and shot him in the middle of his dinner."
"What?"
"Yes, I read about it in the paper. He was dining alone."
"Who was?"
"Walter Middleton, of course, dear. Mrs. Middleton's been dead for years, and the son and daughter were out, so he was alone. The butler heard the shot and ran into the dining room, but Mr. Middleton was already dead. It's been on all the front pages."
"Oh, I only read the funnies."
"He was rich as anything, so there's the motive. Cigarette, Bill?"
No, thanks."
"The son and daughter are the most obvious suspects, so that lets them out. How about some candy, Bill?"
"No, not just now. Why does it let them out?"
"That's too obvious. Fruit?"
"No, thanks."
"Nuts?"
Yeah, I'm beginning to think so."
"Bill, is this Middleton case what you wanted to ask us about?"
Yeah, it has a screwy angle. I thought it would be just up the North Alley. You see, we have two confessions."
"You mean two people have confessed to the same murder?"
"That's right, and each claims he worked alone."
"Well, that doesn't make sense."
"Yeah, that's what I said. And since sense doesn't work in this case, I thought intuition might. How about it, Pam?"
"Have to have something to go on. Who are these people who confessed, Bill? Not the son and daughter?"
No, they're a couple of friends of the Middletons, Larry Chapman and George Warwick."
"Oh, can I meet them?"
"Sure, we're holding them at headquarters."
"Well, let's go."
"All right."
"I wonder what's in back of it, Jerry."
"I know. They heard confessions good for the soul."
"The dining room window was open, so I just pointed the gun through it and fired."
"That's impossible, Larry."
"Why?"
"Because I did."
"Here we go again."
"Look, Lieutenant, doesn't priority count around here? I confessed first."
"But you're lying."
May I ask a question?"
"Go right to it, then."
"Why did you gentlemen kill Mr. Middleton?"
Hold it.
Now, you, Warwick, why did you shoot Middleton?"
"Well, sir, I...
I owed him some money, and I couldn't pay him, so I killed him."
"You took the words right out of my mouth."
"You mean I put them in your mouth? You never even thought of it."
"I don't care what you say. I don't care what anyone says. I killed Walter Middleton. I hope to die if I didn't."
"It's the other way around, George."
"This isn't getting us anywhere."
"Well, why don't we toss a coin? Winner gets the electric chair."
"Wait a minute, Jerry. Now, look. If either of you shot Mr. Middleton, you had to have a gun." "All right. Tell us where the gun is, and we'll see if it matches the bullet."
"I threw the gun away."
"So did I. I mean, that's what I did. I demand you hold me for murder."
"You ought to hold him for plagiarism instead."
"Where did you throw away the gun?"
"Who, me?"
"Either of you. Both of you."
"I don't remember."
"I wrapped the gun in some old newspaper and threw it in some bushes."
"What bushes? Where?"
"That's what I don't remember."
"Well, Pam, you're doing fine. Have any hunches yet?"
"I have a hunch they're both lying."
"That's no hunch. It's a logical conclusion based on observation of the facts."
"You must believe me. I tell you, I killed Walter Middleton."
"With your little hatchet, yeah, we know."
"Now, look. Don't either of you fellas want to change your stories?"
"No. I killed Walter Middleton."
"He didn't. I did."
Okay.
"Here comes the policeman."
"Oh, yes. He has David Middleton with him."
"Hello, Lieutenant Wigand."
"Hello.
Oh, hello, Mr. and Mrs. North."
"Hello.
Lieutenant, I don't know how you're going to like this. Maybe it's good and maybe it ain't."
"All right, what's up?"
"Well, you sent me to question young Middleton here and check up on his whereabouts on the night of the murder, so I did."
"Yes."
"Well, what do you think he tells me? He says he killed his father.
Oh, that's swell. He what?
Yeah. He wants to confess.
Bill, it looks like you've hit the jackpot.
Well, I took your advice, Pam, and released our three murderers.
But what if it turns out that one of them's telling the truth?
Yeah, we can always pick him up again. We certainly have nothing on either one of them as yet.
Besides, if one of them is guilty, this is a better way to trap him. Give him enough rope.
But, darling, you know what some people do with rope.
What?
Skip.
Oh, we'll have to work fast before he has a chance.
Do you have any plans?
I'd like to talk to Helen Middleton. Maybe she can tell us something.
Okay. But if she tells us that she's the one who killed her father, there'll be a second murder. And I'll commit it.
After all, Larry and George are both very dear friends of mine, and David is my brother. You can't expect me to say anything against them.
But if one of them killed your father...
Oh, none of them did, I'm sure.
Why?
Well, I just know it.
Well, then, perhaps you can tell us something to help clear them. They're all under suspicion.
But I don't know what to say. I've told the police all I know, and I've tried to answer your questions.
But unfortunately, it hasn't helped us much.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You can't think of any reason why they should all confess?
No.
All right. Well, we won't keep you any longer, Miss Middleton.
Thank you. I hope you'll pardon me if I don't show you out, but I'm so terribly tired, and I don't want to go downstairs again.
Oh, that's quite all right. Goodbye.
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 Well, Pam, what do you think?
You forget, Jerry. I'm not supposed to think. I'm supposed to feel. You know, intuition.
Well, then, what do you feel?
Bewildered. I don't understand. But... Oh!
I'm sorry, madam. I didn't mean to alarm you.
You ought to give more warning when you pop out of nowhere.
Not nowhere, madam. I was concealed in this archway.
Eavesdropping on our conversation with Miss Middleton, huh?
If you wish to call it that, I call it detecting.
Are you a detective?
Unofficially, like yourselves. Officially, I'm the Middleton's butler.
Oh. Oh, you're the one who discovered the body.
Yes, madam.
Perhaps you can tell us something.
I can tell you a great deal. I'm a profound student of crime. Oh, fascinating subject.
Yes.
I tell you this. You're on the right track. It's not suicide. It's murder.
Well, of course it is. Nobody suggested it wasn't.
After all, there was no gun near the body.
How do you know?
Well, I've...
How do you know I didn't find a gun and hide it to make it look like murder?
But there's no earthly reason why you should.
Uh-uh. Jumping to conclusions. First rule of a good detective. Never jump to conclusions.
But you just said yourself that it was murder.
True. As a matter of fact, there was no gun. But you shouldn't take my word for it. Why are you looking at me like that? Ah, perhaps you think I killed Mr. Middleton. Good. Very good. Never overlook anything. First rule of a good detective.
I thought you just said that the first
yes,
rule was never...
Yes, very good. However, you're wrong. I couldn't have done it.
Why?
The butler never does it. Not anymore. That went out with the bustle. But I'll give you a clue if you want it.
What?
In the back of the house. A little bungalow. Young David Middleton's studio.
What about it?
No one is allowed in it but the young master himself. The windows are all blacked out. My wife does the cleaning here in the main house. But even she's not allowed in there. Nobody is. Doesn't that strike you as significant?
It certainly does.
What mysteries does that studio contain? One time I tried to find out, but young David caught me. He was very angry.
Haven't you any idea what he keeps there?
No, but I'm sure it must be important. If you want the key to the mystery, find out the secret of the studio.
Okay, thanks for telling us. Come on, Ben.
All right. Goodbye, Mr. Butler.
Goodbye.
Well, Jerry, let's go and see if we can get in the studio.
Oh, don't be silly, Pam. That butler's slap happy.
But there might be something to that story of the studio.
Nonsense.
But suppose there is, Jerry. We shouldn't overlook anything.
First rule of a good detective.
I mean it.
Well, we'll tell Bill if he wants to investigate, he can.
I think we ought to.
But, Pam...
We're right here.
I don't think we should.
Oh, Jerry, please.
No.
Please.
No.
it in the clump of trees. Come on, Jerry. Careful, nobody sees us.
You know, if young Middleton catches us at this, he'd be within his legal rights if he shot us.
Oh, I can't see that it would hurt any more than if it were illegal. I mean, if you were shot, you wouldn't care, would you, whether it was legal or not, especially if you were dead. Oh, let's not let him catch us, huh?
You're right. Let's not. Be careful. This moonlight's pretty bright. Stay close to the bushes.
All right.
I don't know why I let you talk me into things like this.
Because you're sweet.
I think it's your baby blue eyes. They look so sad when you can't have your way. Like a calf's. Well, here we are.
Calf's eyes are brown.
Somehow that seems irrelevant. Now that we're here, what do we do?
Let's see if we can find some way to get in. Golly, it seems kind of spooky, doesn't it? It's all dark.
Yeah.
What's the matter?
Oh, wait a minute. Thought I heard something. I guess I was wrong. Well, now, what do you want to do?
I think I'll just try the door. Jerry, how can you laugh? I've been shot.
You're all wet.
I'm not. I've been shot. Oh. Oh, I am, aren't I? I thought it was blood.
No, Dolly. You just walked into a trap. A bucket of water fell on your head.
I'm soaked to the skin.
What's going on here?
Oh, hello, Middleton. My wife decided to take a shower.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. North. I hope you're all right.
I guess so. Only I'm cold.
Well, come on back to the house and you can warm up. I'm sorry about this, but I don't like people to go near my studio.
So we found out. You know, that's quite an effective booby trap you have there, young fellow. Isn't it, Pam? I beg your pardon?
Shoot! Laughing and come to bed.
I can't help it, Pam, when I think of the way you look. Like a drowned cat.
Before I was a calf.
Well, you will go snooping into other people's business.
Well, Bill asked us to help him.
I'm afraid you weren't much help.
I guess not. You know, Jerry, in spite of it all, I like that David Middleton.
Yeah, he seems to be a nice kid.
I would like to know what he's got in that studio.
Maybe he's hoarding sugar.
Oh, now what?
I'll answer it, dear. Hello? Yes?
This is George Warwick.
Oh, yes.
I've been trying to get hold of Lieutenant Wygant. Do you know where he is?
No, but I think I can find him for you.
Good. If you and he come out to my house right away, I'll show you something very important.
What is it?
I've just discovered a very important clue. Now I know who killed Mr. Middleton.
Well, I thought you said you killed him.
I'll explain everything. How soon can you get here?
I don't know. As soon as I find Bill.
All right, I'll be waiting. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Who is it, Jerry?
George Warwick. You better put your clothes on again, darling. One of our murderers has something to tell us. And this time, it's not a confession.
Well, this is it.
I wonder what he wants to show us.
Well, it better be good. I don't like coming out in the middle of the night for nothing.
I doubt that this will be as good as he promised. Somehow, I don't trust
Wait
that.
Wait a minute, Bill.
What is it, Pam?
I think there's somebody standing by the corner of the house.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, boy, he's shooting at us.
Hey!
Gary!
Now, a brief intermission for a message of special interest to the ladies.
If you are not a user of Woodbury Cold Cream, I think I know why. It isn't because you believe your complexion is already flawless. I doubt if any girl has such a perfect skin she doesn't want to make it lovelier. No, the reason probably is you haven't yet been convinced that Woodbury Cold Cream can make a real difference in your complexion. But that just proves you haven't yet tried Woodbury Cold Cream. For using it once will show you how extra effective it is. You see, Woodbury Cold Cream isn't just another cold cream at all. It's a complete beauty cream. It actually does everything for your skin. Why not take 3 minutes tonight to see all it can do? Smooth the silky cream over your face and throat. It leaves your skin sparkling clean, glowing. Now pat on more. And this time, let a trace remain on your skin overnight. Tomorrow, well, you may scarcely believe your eyes, your skin will have such a radiant, new, smooth look. Now that's the famous Woodbury Beauty Nightcap. Do it every night. But don't forget, Woodbury Cold Cream is as grand for daytime beautifying. It leaves your skin looking lovelier. Helps your makeup have that professional finish you envied. Woodbury Cold Cream gives such remarkable results because of 4 specialing, softening, smoothing ingredients, and because of another exclusive ingredient working constantly to purify the cream in the jar in case blemish-causing germs should get in. Try this amazing, complete beauty cream. Get Woodbury Cold Cream tonight.
And now back to Mr. and Mrs. North. The Norths and Wiegand were approaching George Warwick's house when someone began shooting at them.
Golly, is he shooting at us?
Doc Payne!
Jerry!
There he goes. He's running in back of the house. You got your gun, Jerry?
Yeah.
Good. Go around the other side. I'll go this way.
Okay.
See anything, Jerry?
Pam, you shouldn't have followed me.
Well, I wasn't going to stay back there alone.
Well, all right.
There's someone by the back door.
Yeah, back, Pam. Who's there?
Hello, that's you, Jerry.
Bill, yeah.
See anyone, Jerry?
No.
No, neither did I.
What do we do now?
Well, I guess we'd better go the other...
Help!
What's that?
Someone's calling for help.
Help! Help!
It's coming from inside the house. Come on. Here's the door. It's locked. I have to break the glass. Then I can reach in, turn the knob. Look out.
Okay.
There we are.
Help!
The call's coming from upstairs.
Right, let's go.
I can't see anything.
Now, wait, I'm feeling for the light switch. Oh, here it is.
Oh, that's better.
Now, come on.
Hello, where are you?
In here.
Sounded like that room there.
Right.
Hello in there. The door's locked.
Break it in.
Okay, I'll shoot off the lock.
Stand back, Jerry. There we are.
Hey, where are you?
Over here, behind the bed.
What? Oh, it's Warwick.
His hands and feet tied. What happened, fella?
Larry knocked me down. Tied my hands and feet and ran out.
Larry Chapman, eh?
Yes. He wore a mask, but I recognized him anyway.
He must be the one who shot at us.
Probably. I heard the shot. I wondered what was happening.
Can you roll over a little so I can get to this other nut?
Yeah.
That's it. I'll have you loose in a second.
What did Chapman want, Warwick?
Well, he must have been snooping around and heard me phone you. He's probably stolen the clue.
What clue?
The gun that killed Walter Middleton.
You mean you found the gun?
That's right.
Well, there you are, all untied.
Thanks.
Now, what about this gun?
I had it locked in my desk downstairs. Perhaps he didn't find it. Come on, we'll see.
Okay.
You see, on the night of the murder, I saw Larry throw a package wrapped in newspaper in some bushes. I didn't think anything of it until today when he mentioned wrapping the pistol in newspaper and throwing it in the bushes.
And you went back to the same spot tonight and the gun was still there?
Yes. I went back as soon as you released me. Then I went to see Helen.
Why?
I had to be sure she wasn't involved. As soon as I found out she had a perfect alibi, I phoned the North.
Oh, then you confessed before just to shield Miss Middleton.
That's right, Mrs. North.
But it wasn't necessary. Chapman had already confessed.
I know, but he was just making a play for her benefit. He's cut in enough already. Until he came along, I thought my chances with her were pretty good. Now I'm not so sure. Well, here we are. In just a second, I'll open the desk. Ah, it's still here.
Yeah, so it is. Let me see it.
Here.
Well, apparently that isn't what Chapman was after then. Maybe he just wanted a chance to shoot us.
But why would he want to kill us, Jerry?
I don't know.
Well, I can't explain it. All I know is that he knocked me down, tied me up, and then I heard him run out the door. And the next thing I knew, there was shooting.
Say, wait a minute. Let's see that.
What, the gun?
No, the paper it's wrapped in.
What is it, Jerry?
Warwick. You say you saw Chapman throw this package in the bushes on the night of the murder.
That's right.
Well, that's very strange.
Why?
Well, the murder took place a couple of days ago. But this newspaper the gun's wrapped in is today's paper.
What? Why, I don't understand.
I think I'm beginning to.
Well, there's some mistake.
I'll say there is, and you've made it.
Oh, no. You can't think that I...
Oh, can't we, though? How about that other story of yours?
Which story?
About Chapman attacking you and tying you up.
It's true. He did.
Oh, he did, huh? And then he ran out the door.
That's right.
How do you explain the fact that when we reached the door to your room, it was locked from the inside?
I don't know.
According to your story, you couldn't have locked it because you were tied up. Chapman went out through it.
Well, it must have... Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Jerry, look out. He's grabbing the
gun.
Stop
him, Bill.
No, you don't. I've got the gun now. Stand back, all of you. That's it.
Now, look here, Warwick. You
can't
get away.
I'm getting out of here.
He's getting away.
Yes, darling. I'm afraid he is.
And you're sure you haven't any idea where he might go to hide out, Miss Middleton?
No, I haven't.
All right, thank you. We'll run along. I'm sorry we had to disturb you in the middle of the night like this.
Well, that's all right.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, no luck here. We'll have to try something else.
You know, Bill, I can't help wondering.
About what?
If he really was guilty, why did he confess?
Oh, that was clever. By seeming to protect Miss Middleton, he threw suspicion off himself.
Of course, that's it. Bill, Jerry, I just thought of something.
You think you know where he is?
I think I know where... Wait a minute.
What is it?
Look, there's a light under the door in David Middleton's studio. Come on.
Why? You don't think Warwick's there, do you?
No, but I've just got to find out what's in there.
You and your curiosity. You know what I got you before.
Well, watch out, Jerry. I know what to look for this time.
Pam, we've got a murderer to track down.
Oh, you men. Don't you have any curiosity? Besides, it won't take any time. Come on.
All right.
Let's go, Bill. There'll be no living with her until she's satisfied.
Well, all right.
Oh, you're darlings, both of you.
We're saps.
Yeah. I don't know why I agreed. I don't have to live with her.
Shh, Bill. We're getting close.
Too bad you forgot your bathing suit.
Shh. I won't touch anything this time, Jerry. I'll just stoop down and see if I can see through the keyhole.
See anything?
Yes. He's in there.
Young Middleton?
Uh-huh.
What's he doing?
Sewing.
Sewing?
Yes.
What's the idea?
I lost my balance.
Hey.
Oh, I'm sorry. I lost my balance. I fell against the door, and I'm terribly sorry. I didn't mean to... I fell.
Doggone it. I told you to keep away from here. Oh, Mr. North, too, and the lieutenant. What do you want?
I wanted to be able to live with my wife.
Huh?
Yes, she just had to see what you have in here.
Well, now you see. I hope you're satisfied.
Dolls?
Yes, I make them. Silly, isn't it?
I don't think so.
I just like to make dolls. Sort of a hobby. There's no law against it, is there?
No, not that I've heard.
I know. I ought to fool around with shortwave radio or electric motors or something. But I'd rather make dolls. Well, what are you waiting for? Why don't you laugh?
I don't feel like it.
Look, son. Is this where you were the night of the murder?
Yes. That's why I confessed. So you'd all stop asking questions about where I was. I didn't want to have to tell about it. I was safe enough. Two confessions before mine, and I could always tell the truth if I had to. But I hoped I wouldn't have to.
Oh, you shouldn't feel so ashamed, David. These dolls are beautiful. Why, you're an artist. Look, Jerry, all kinds of characters.
Yeah, they're absolutely perfect.
Look, every little detail exact. Some of these dolls are so tiny, and others are almost life-size.
Thanks, Mrs. North. You can have one if you like.
Oh, thank you, I would. This one, this little old man with a pipe.
Okay, he's yours.
Oh, thank you, David. Jerry, look, isn't he cute? Little wrinkled-up face. Jerry.
Hmm?
Dolls.
What about them?
They give me an idea. I think I know how we can catch the murderer.
With dolls?
Yes, Jerry. With dolls.
You see, Miss Middleton, it was quite a scheme. By pretending to shield you, Warwick could throw suspicion off himself.
The very confession of murder would suggest he was innocent.
And then being found tied up right after we were shot at, it would again make him seem innocent of that, too. And the gun plant would throw the blame where he wanted it.
Clever.
It's too clever.
Anybody who'd work out such an elaborate scheme wouldn't make such stupid mistakes as the date on the paper and the locked door.
Besides, he's a slitherer.
A what?
A slitherer.
There are two kinds of liars, twisters and slitherers. Twisters figure out three or four twists ahead and lie accordingly, while slitherers just slide into whatever lie seems to fit at the moment. Mr. Warwick is a slitherer.
But how do you know?
At the jail, Mr. Chapman was always way ahead of Mr. Warwick. He confessed first, and he lied much better. He's a twister.
It was he who confessed to throw suspicion off himself. Warwick simply confessed out of jealousy at Chapman's getting all your gratitude.
Only a twister would have thought of that first confession.
And get this twist. Instead of framing a case against Warwick, he lets Warwick frame a case against him. A case that will fold up and make Warwick seem guilty.
You mean Larry is the murderer?
Well, sure.
But then why did George run away?
He saw so much evidence piling up against him, he was afraid we'd be able to pin the murder on him. Chapman's scheme was working.
And it was an elaborate scheme, too. Chapman planted the gun in today's paper and put it in the bushes.
And after tying up Warwick, he walked to the door, slammed it, and then quietly locked it. Slipped to the window and got out that way. Warwick, on the floor behind the bed, couldn't see him.
I can't believe it. Why? Why would he do all this? Kill Father and then try to put the blame on George?
Simple. With your father's death, you and your brother share the inheritance. And by framing Warwick, Chapman hoped to eliminate him and marry you for your money.
Oh, I can't believe it. I can't.
Unfortunately, it's true. We haven't told Bill yet, but as soon as he gets here, we're going to tell him...
You're not going to do anything. I'm shutting you up now.
All right, Chapman, drop that pistol. I've got you covered. That's it. Okay, folks, you can come out from behind the sofa.
Helen! And Mr. and Mrs. North?
Yeah, what you shot were just dummies. Life-size dolls, which you probably can see yourself now that you take the time.
Mr. and Mrs. Proxy. Oh, poor Mrs. Proxy. You hit her right between the eyes.
Helen, you were in on this. You invited me here, left the front door open so I'd come in and overhear you.
Yes, Larry.
She didn't want to. But when we convinced her that you'd killed her father, she agreed.
Well, you can come along with me, Chapman. We didn't have any proof against you before, but we have now.
Thanks to Mr. and Mrs. Proxy. Gollys, Jerry, you know something?
What?
We're not such bad twisters ourselves, are we?
You think a film star has an easy life? Well, she doesn't. Making a picture is unusually hard work. She has to be up at dawn to have her makeup on and be ready in time. She works all day under blazing lights. Then there are personal appearances, for every star is busy with war work these days. And off the set as well as on, she has to look glamorous. Well, the beauty care that can keep her skin soft and radiant through all that has to be remarkably effective. And here's what Veronica Lake does. The Paramount star now appearing in So Proudly We Hail. She told us...
I take the 3-minute Woodbury Beauty Nightcap every night with Woodbury Cold Cream. The beauty results are thrilling.
Well, girls, your skin may not have such hard treatment as a film star's, but if Woodbury Cold Cream can do so much for them, think what it can do for you. That's because Woodbury is much more than just cold cream. It's a complete beauty cream. Jars, 10 cents to $1.25. That's Woodbury, W-O-O-D-B-U-R-Y, Woodbury Cold Cream. Get a jar tonight. Tune in again next Wednesday evening at the same time for another adventure of Mr. and Mrs. North. For thrills and laughs, be sure to listen, won't you? This is Ben Grauer saying good night for
Woodbury, 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 for the skin you love to touch.
Program came to you from New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum. A repository of death. Yes, here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a teapot, a sewing needle, a folding camera, all are touched by murder. Now, here's a handkerchief. A khaki handkerchief. Soldier's handkerchief. It's a common enough sort of thing during the war.
A handkerchief, Stark. Fairly clean, if a bit moldy.
That would be from exposure, Thompson. Looks like army issue.
It is, but no hero used it. You can bet on that.
Well, that handkerchief can be seen today in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum.
At the Black Museum in Scotland Yard. Just come into this silent room. Outside, the Thames is busy with London's river traffic, and just upstairs, police communications tap from the teletypes, ring from the telephones. But here, as I say, is silence. Now, here's a length of garden hose. Once it was connected to an exhaust of a car. From there up through the floorboards. The time was winter. The driver rode with all the windows closed, and the car crashed. The man died. It wasn't exactly an accident, no. It was murder. Here's a German Mauser, war trophy, heavy gun. Strange, a tiny woman held it with two hands, smudged her own fingerprints. She was found out. Her hands gave her away. The paraffin test, you know, for gunpowder smoke. Ah, here we are. Here it is, the khaki handkerchief. Originally, it was intended for camouflage. Fairly shouted for recognition at the right time in the wrong place. Yet the trouble first appeared as the commonplace ringing of a telephone.
Hello?
Mrs. Lyons?
Yes?
This is Liz Hart. How are you?
Fine. And you?
All right. I'm a little worried, though. Kathy's so late getting home. Is she with Doris?
Well, they're not here. I thought Doris was with Kathy at your house.
Oh, dear. Now, where have they got to?
Oh, probably stopped at one of their friends' houses. Now, don't you worry. Kathy will come home with my Doris, and both of them will be full of stories.
So ordinary, so commonplace. One mother worries, the other doesn't. Later, around six, the worrier, Mrs. Hart, Kathy's mother, speaks to her husband.
You'll have to speak to Kathy when she gets home.
Isn't she home? It's practically dinner time. I thought she was in her room.
She's off somewhere. Oh, John, I'm so worried.
You call the places where she might be?
Hours ago. No one's seen her.
Well, we'll have to wait until 6:30. Then I suppose we'll have to start looking for her.
Oh, when will Kathy learn to let us know?
6:30. No Kathy, no word from Kathy. This time the telephone rings in the Hart household. Mrs. Lyons is calling Mrs. Hart.
Yes. I assumed you'd call me if Doris turned up with Kathy at your house. Oh, dear, I wonder where they can have gotten to.
A frantic Mrs. Hart cradled the telephone, looks to her husband. Together they leave the house, go out into the darkening street to ring doorbells.
I'm sorry to disturb you, but I'm trying to find my girl.
But the Carters haven't seen Kathy.
Excuse us, old man, but our Kathy seems to be among the unaccounted for.
No, the Bradleys haven't seen Kathy.
Sorry to bother you. Have you seen anything of Arlo?
No, the Corbetts haven't seen Kathy.
Oh, please, I'm almost frantic. Where's my... Oh.
No one has seen Kathy. No one's seen Doris. Word is getting around now. The rumors spread. The time grows later. All of Penn, rustic Penn in Buckinghamshire, is buzzing now. At the inn, the tap room is crowded. Closing time draws near. Still, no word.
Penn Inn, landlord speaking.
Oh, this is John Hart. Look, Lyons and I are together at my place. Do you think some of the men would help us start a search?
Well, I'll ask them, Mr. Hart. I'm sure they will. Now, you stay right where you are. We'll be along very soon. Can I have your attention, men? Your attention, men. Hart and Lyons need help. They want to start a search. Now, how many of you fellas will help? After all, neighbors are neighbors. And if we can...
So it begins. The long, hard search continues. It's 6 hours now they've been missing. It's dark, very, very little moon. The lanterns of the searchers move around the village of Penn through the fields and the clumps of trees in ever-widening circles. The men beat the fields. At the Hart home, two mothers wait and wait and wait.
Yes?
Nothing yet, dear. Try not to worry.
Nothing yet.
The sun rides high above the fields and woods of Buckinghamshire. Sun passes its course, descending behind the hills to the west. Already the searchers, hundreds of them now, have moved outward from Penn, some 4 miles outward. The night is coming on. The doorbell rings.
Yes?
Just on my way to the inn, ma'am, for more lanterns. Just to tell you, we'll keep at it all night, if need be.
There's nothing yet.
Night again. Now the police are in the search, and with them a group of soldiers from a nearby camp. Steadily, monotonously, the men work, their voices subdued, the lanterns bobbing and weaving over the countryside. Outward, always outward from Penn. 5 miles now, 6 miles. As the radius lengthens, there's more ground to cover. False dawn grays the sky to the east, and the morning star low in the west begins to pale.
This way! Hello!
You found something, matey?
I found something.
Yeah?
Covered with leaves they were. Just behind me here.
Found. The weary men brought the terribly tragic news back to Penn. In the little wood with its running stream where the bodies were found, two of Scotland Yard's inspectors, Thompson and Stark, took over together. Now was the time for professionals at manhunting.
We got, Stark.
Not much. Barely anything to go on. Gas mask container, wooden, out near the road. I don't think they were killed here, do you?
No, chances are against that. One of the men brought me this. A handkerchief, Stark. Fairly clean, if a bit moldy.
That would be from exposure, Thompson. Looks like army issue.
It is, but no hero used it. You can bet on that.
There are tire marks and an oil patch over to the right. Truck tires. Double rear wheels. Army truck, it looks like.
Plaster casts?
The men are making them now.
Army truck, army handkerchief. Anything else?
Not yet.
All right, let's get out of here. We've got a killer to find.
They know the routine, these two. But grimly, they set about the work. Stark takes the gas mask container, the plaster casts, the handkerchief, to the experts at the yard. Thompson stays on in Penn. He visits a different kind of yard.
Doris and Kathy were once my pupils, Inspector. I have a very personal reason for wanting to help you. But just how can I?
It doesn't need me to tell you, miss, how observant children can be. Now, it occurred to me that some of the kiddies in your school who live near the Hart's home might have noticed something unusual on their way back from school. Of course, it's only a shot in the dark, but a child might remember something that a grown-up would forget.
I see what you mean, Inspector.
Right then. Now, who in your class lives near the Harts?
Let me see now. Linda Carter. Oh, yes, and Kenneth Bradley. They're playing just over there. Come with me.
Now then, what's your name, young lady?
Linda. Linda Carter.
And yours, my lad?
Kenneth Bradley, sir.
I understand you two both live in the same street as the Harts.
Yes, sir. I live next door. Kenneth's a couple of houses down.
Right, Kenneth?
Yes, sir.
Now, I know you'd like to help me if you could. I think your teacher told you I'm from Scotland Yard.
She sure did. You don't look like a detective.
Detectives usually don't look like detectives. Now, let me tell you something. We're looking for a truck. A large, heavy truck.
An army truck, maybe?
Maybe. Why, did you see one, say, day before yesterday?
Yes, sir. At the crossroads. Just standing there.
Oh, I saw it, too. It was a big one.
Oh, anyone in it?
Just the driver. He had an awful red face. And he had glasses on with silver rims. He was sitting there smoking.
Can you tell me anything about the truck?
No, I just remember the man in it.
It looked like a wireless truck, but it didn't have any aerial. There were those big double wheels on the back, and a number 44 on the door, and a red and blue square on one side, and the tailboard had some letters. JB, I think. And on the front bumper, there was BAT, CPM.
Battery C, prime mover. Anything else, Kenneth?
Not that I can think of, sir.
No, sir.
How old do you think the driver was, Linda?
Oh, 26.
You seem very sure. Did you ask him?
No, sir. But he looked about my father's age, and Daddy's 26. I heard him say so.
Thank you, Linda. You too, Ken. You've been very helpful. When you come to London, I'll see to it that you're shown through the yard. You'll like that, I'm sure, eh?
Inspector Thompson sought out his colleague, Stark, at Scotland Yard.
I've got good descriptions. The truck and the driver. How about you, old man?
Laundry mark and the handkerchief. Print on gas mask container, that's all. Anybody seen them in the truck?
A man and a woman, about a mile apart, along the line from the school towards where they were found.
Any numbers in the truck?
Battery, regiment, and division insignia.
That laundry mark's going through the mill. H2503 has been checked in every laundry in the county of Buckingham.
Good. I'll get on to Army Intelligence. We'll find that truck, the outfit that uses it, and the man who drives it. A leaky axle drips oil, does it? We'll see about that.
Well, that handkerchief can be seen today in the Black Museum. Now it was routine, except for the unforgettable sight of leaf-shrouded bodies in the wood. The mechanics of tracing a laundry mark are routine. The preservation of plaster casts of tire marks, that's routine, grim routine. With an inevitability about it, pursuing the routine, Inspector Thompson called Army Intelligence and spoke with a colonel whose main function was liaison with the civilian police.
Those are the details, Colonel.
Well, I have it all down. Large number 44, red and blue square, JB on the tailboard.
Yes.
Battery C, PM on the front bumper.
That's it.
Sounds like one of those Fords and 6x6s we've been getting for our field artillery. I'll call you back, Inspector.
Thank you.
Like war, crime detection is largely a matter of waiting for information, waiting for results when the wanted alarms are sent out, waiting for a suspect to appear at a certain place. And now Thompson and Stark waited for answers to their inquiries. In a matter of hours, the answers began to come in.
There's a report on the laundry mark, Thompson. Ties in with a series given an army outfit stationed about 5 miles outside of Penn Village.
It begins to fit, it begins to fit.
Patiently and grimly, the two men went on waiting. Once again, the telephone.
Inspector Thompson here.
Colonel Gardner, Inspector. I have your information.
Here he comes, Stark.
Good.
Go ahead, Colonel.
That truck apparently belongs to the 44th Battalion Devonshire Blues. A Battery C prime mover.
Where is that outfit, sir?
They've been in camp 5 miles outside Penn Village. They've just been moved to Yoxford on the south coast for further field training.
Thank you, Colonel.
Shall I advise the CO down there to expect you?
If you would. It should take us about 2 hours.
You move fast, don't you? I'll tell him. And good hunting. Hope you get your man.
Thank you again, sir. If he's still with that outfit, we'll get him. If he's still alive, we'll get him. Yoxford, Stark. Get a car and a driver. We're going to the country.
Traffic was light and gasoline rationed England. Some 2 hours later, Thompson and Stark conferred with the major commanding the battalion.
Yes, we do have a prime mover with a leaky axle, gentlemen. As a matter of fact, it's in the shed just outside.
May we see it, Major?
Yes, of course. This way.
I have the tire cast, Stark.
Good.
And our accommodations are still a bit primitive. No proper garage facilities. We just moved into this setup day before yesterday.
We understand, Major. You've been having much trouble with that truck?
Oh, yes, yes. A few days ago, just before we broke camp near Penn, that's over in Buckinghamshire.
Yes, we know the place.
We released the truck to the maintenance depot. Apparently, there isn't much they can do with it. The main differential is a problem. Ah, well, there we are.
JB on the tailboard.
Have a look at the inside, will you? I'll take the tires and the markings.
Check.
44 on the door, yes. Big enough. The leg could hardly miss it. Red and blue square.
Our battery shoulder patch, Inspector.
Yes, I thought so. Markings all checked. Let me see now. The tires.
Now, fall in here, Thompson.
Yes, tires checked with the cast, Stark.
Well, we expected that. Here's something on the tarpaulin. What do you make of these stages?
Want a guess, old man?
Oh, your guess is as good as mine, and it'll be confirmed by pathology.
Blood. I think we're through here, Major. May we go back to your office, please?
Blood on the tarpaulin, crumpled up and tossed into a corner of the truck.
I don't think they were killed here, do you?
No, chances are against that. No blood around here.
But blood on the tarpaulin in the truck. The two detectives and the Major went back to the orderly room. Oh,
I think we'd better see the driver of that truck, Major.
Oh, yes, of course. Sergeant Carroll.
Yep.
Do you know who drives the prime mover for Battery C?
That'll be Driscoll, sir.
Oh, where is he now?
Oh, I expect he's in the battery day room, sir.
Oh, bring him over, will you? With his gear, duffel bag, the whole outfit.
Yes, sir.
The sergeant turned and left. The Major with Thompson and Stark waited silently, each busy with his own thoughts.
An army is a cross-section of the population, they say. If this Driscoll did this thing, part of that cross-section, I suppose.
That blood stain. I hope there's enough for pathology to type it.
Laundry marks. His shirts and underwear ought to have the same mark as the handkerchief, if he's the man.
In the day room of Battery C, the situation was normal. The sergeant walked in without attracting too much attention.
Oh, here you are, Driscoll.
What's up, Sarge?
You are. Major wants you.
Well, what's wrong now?
He didn't tell me. Let's get over to quarters first.
Well, what for?
Major wants to see your gear. All of it.
Oh.
Let's go.
Was the waiting over? Out of the seeming anonymity of the army, had they found their man, and so quickly?
In my office, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. Oh! Colonel Driscoll, Major.
Thank you, Sergeant. Dismiss. At ease, Driscoll.
Thank you, sir.
This is Inspector Thompson and Inspector Stark, Scotland Yard. They have some questions, Driscoll. Answer them.
I'll try, sir.
Well, he's all yours, gentlemen.
May I examine your duffel bag, Driscoll?
Of course, sir.
Your blouse is rather wet, isn't it?
Caught in the rain, sir. Must have been quite a rain to go through the pockets like this.
It was, sir. You're sure you didn't wash it yourself and pack it before it was dried?
No, sir. It was the rain, sir.
How do you explain the shirt, the cuffs cut off like this?
Came back from the laundry with the cuffs all frayed. I cut them off. I only used the shirt round the trap, sir.
I see. Driscoll, does this handkerchief look familiar to you?
Like any other handkerchief, Inspector?
Thompson. The laundry marks. Here, collar of the shirt.
I see it.
We'll try again, Driscoll. Look at the laundry marks on the shirt and on the handkerchief. Seems to be yours, doesn't it?
I wouldn't know about laundry marks. They're identical, aren't they?
Have you had a handkerchief like this recently?
All the army issue is the same, sir. We get a lot of trouble getting things back from the laundry. Someone else could have had this handkerchief.
Rather a careless laundry, Driscoll.
Sorry, sir. Yes, sir.
Have a look at this tarpaulin, Driscoll.
Yes, sir.
What's your guess about those stains?
Grease, sir.
That shape? That color?
Might be blood, sir.
This tarpaulin comes from your truck, Driscoll.
I never saw the stain, sir. Might be someone swapped this one for mine.
Driscoll, where were you on the 19th, 3 days ago?
Maintenance depot. Repairs. Leaky axle.
Did they repair it?
Well, they couldn't. Not in the time we had before we moved down here.
I see. Anything else, Stark?
Not at the moment.
Major, we'd appreciate it if you'd hold this man under escort. There are still a few inquiries to be made.
Yes, of course, Inspector.
Oh, Sergeant, in here, please.
There were still the loose ends on identification on the laundry problem. Driscoll wore horn-rimmed glasses. Inspector Thompson asked some more questions.
I see, Corporal. He wore army issue and suddenly he bought himself the horn frame. You joked with him about it and he didn't like it. Grew angry, did he?
Inspector Stark visited the regimental laundry depot.
No complaints from Gunner Driscoll about losing things for him. Never tore or frayed his shirts. I see. Thank you.
Stark stayed with the shirt. A battery made of Driscoll's had noticed the missing cuffs.
The night you rolled in here, you noticed the cuffs missing. That was the night of the 20th. Very good.
Inspector Thompson turned up an interesting item.
Say that again, Sergeant.
Night we came in here, we heard about those two in the woods. We were shooting the breeze about it in the day room. All at once, sir, Driscoll looks around and says, 10 to 1, there's a murderer in here, that's what.
And once again, a telephone.
Yes? Oh, it's for you, Inspector.
Thank you, Major. Inspector Thompson speaking. He did? I see. It's been checked at criminal records. Good. Very good. Yes, of course I wanted the word at once. Thank you very much.
They found something?
The crew we left at Penn turned up the second gas mask container. Metal, this one. Had a print on it. They checked in criminal records. The fingerprint belongs to an Oscar Driscoll. Served a term 8 years ago for molesting and impairing the morals of a minor. Oscar Driscoll, you're under arrest. The charge is willful murder of Kathy Hart and Doris Lyons on the afternoon of October the 19th.
Well, that handkerchief can be seen today in the Black Museum. The defense, of course, was insanity. The defense tried to prove that Driscoll suffered from schizophrenia, split personality, that he had no recollection of what he'd done and therefore no legal responsibility. The jury brought in its verdict and finally, this man died at the hands of the public executioner. There was apparently no doubt in the minds of the jury that this man had known and planned exactly what he'd done. At any rate, the khaki handkerchief remains in its usual place in Scotland Yard in the Black Museum. And now, until next time, till we meet again in the same place and I tell you another story of the Black Museum, I remain as always obediently yours.
That's a wrap for this episode of Case Closed. I'll be back next Wednesday with more. Between now and then, you can find more old-time radio at relicradio.com alongside everything else, our forum, Shoutcast stream, link to the Facebook page, and a link to our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thank you very much to those who have. Thank you very much for joining me today. Talk to you again soon with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for relicradio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.